If you're like me, you probably passed along a few urban legends. Well, sometimes they're true, sometimes they're not. Either way, they're great stories, which is why we love them. And that's why our guest this morning loves them, too. And he'll be here to share his favorites. And when he can, he'll tell us if they're true or not. Good morning. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Albert Jack joins us this hour from South Africa. His latest book is called Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, The Strange Stories Behind Tall Tales. And Albert Jack, welcome.
Good morning to you, Veronica.
Can I ask you what time it is in South Africa?
Right now, we're about 5 minutes past six. It's just in time for a sundowner. But the sun will be going down at about 7:15, so we'll all be in the bars by then.
Is that the way it goes down there?
Well, it depends. How long have you got me for?
I'll have to ask my producer, Marika, about that. She's from South Africa.
I would rather be with you than on the beach in Cape Town, I promise.
Oh, thank you. That's a high compliment. So, you know what? Let's get our terminology straight. How do you define urban legend, especially if sometimes they're true?
Well, if they're true, then they usually become a mystery, don't they? I mean, this was kind of... Another book I wrote was about mysteries, and this was where the urban legend idea came up, was the distinction. Because, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, for example, is that a mystery or is that just an urban legend? You know, the Beast of Bodmin Moor. Bigfoot, for example. Is that myth? Is that urban legend? Or is that a real mystery? How do you categorise these? And I suppose the answer is evidence, isn't it? The thing about urban legends specifically, though, is that with the exception of perhaps the ghost stories, you know, the Phantom Hitchhiker, the famous one, apart from the ghost stories, they all could be true. Keith Moon might have driven that Rolls-Royce into the swimming pool. It's possible. You know, Van Halen, as you mentioned in the preamble, may very well have asked for a bowl of Smarties or M&Ms to have no brown versions in there whatsoever. How Spinal Tap is that?
So there's an element of truth. Like, are you saying they have to be plausible?
They have to be plausible, exactly. They all could have happened.
Well, so a lot of these...
And in many cases, you know, probably did, actually. I think if it's bizarre enough to imagine in this world, then someone somewhere is probably doing it.
So is that why they're so fun to tell? Why do you think that... Why are they so fun to tell?
Because we can all say, can't we, you know, when my granddad came back from Korea, or when he came back from the Second World War, a friend of his and a friend of theirs, and they're always told as third parties. My hairdresser's sister told me a story the other day, and so on and so on. That's really how you define urban legends. It's because you can hear the same variation on a theme, really, time and time again.
And they're pretty viral, aren't they?
These days, I guess, with the internet, for sure. And I've got a very good example of that. I can tell you of a personal experience, if you wish, later on.
Yeah, please.
I can tell you now, two or three in the book, and hopefully your listeners can try and work out which ones they are, if I'm lucky enough for them to go and buy the book. I actually made up myself.
Really?
They're not true. I know that. They're not true. I've completely made them up from my imagination. Now, and this was when I was in England. I wrote the book in London a couple of years ago. And I was sitting in a bar in Cape Town last year, and a friend of mine from Johannesburg started reading a text message in front of me at the table, and then he started reading out this story, and before he got to the end, I told him the punchline, and he said, "Oh, you've heard it too, have you?" I said, "No, I wrote that. I actually made that up." And now it's going viral. He said, "No, I don't believe you." And I said, "Look, here's the book. There it is, page whatever. I made that up."
No way.
It isn't true. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, I was going to ask you how to make up your own. So are there ingredients that go into the special sauce?
Oh, you want all the secrets?
I do.
Veronica, I can't tell you. Maybe later. Ask me again later, once we've got to know each other better.
Once you've hit the pub, I'll ask you again. So, you know, a lot of these urban legends, they seem to involve celebrities, don't they? And that's part of the thing that makes them intriguing to us. And there's even one about, you know, the great Albert Einstein. You know, would you tell us about Albert?
Well, this was before really television media and before he was, I mean, he was quite a recognisable character towards the end of his life. But in the early days when he was, you know, working on his theories and when he was lecturing, no one really knew what he looked like. He would turn up and lecture to a university or in front of an audience at Carnegie Hall or somewhere. And his chauffeur became so familiar with his lecture that they used to... I don't know if you call it playing a prank, but the chauffeur sat in basically hundreds and hundreds of lectures. And in the end, Einstein said, you give this one. I'll pretend to be the chauffeur. No one knows what we look like. And the chauffeur, in the end, used to go and do one or two of the lectures, which I thought was quite an interesting bit of fun for them before Einstein actually got famous. Although there was one particular time when, on fielding questions, the chauffeur was asked a particularly difficult mathematical question, which he obviously had no idea about. And all he did was dismiss the question by saying, that, my friend, is such an easy thing to ask me. I'm going to leave that with my chauffeur to deal with. And Einstein had to come up on stage and explain the theory.
Which is a brilliant answer. It's so easy. I'm going to let the chauffeur do it, and then you just leave. But is that Is that a true one? Because it's hard to believe. You know, I know Einstein had an irreverent side, but was he really that gonzo that he'd let his chauffeur get up there?
And this is the other wonderful thing about urban legends and about the bloke who wrote the book about them, is because if I told you it was, you'd believe me, wouldn't you?
Oh, you're playing hard to get again.
because I would sound like I had so much authority on the subject. Do you know what, Veronica? Yes, I can tell you that one is true.
Aha, thank you.
I've no idea.
Some of them you do cop to being true or not, right? And I know I have read one that shocked me, and you say it's probably true in your book, Winston Churchill. Tell us about Winston Churchill.
There's a couple. So which one are you specifically asking me about? The one that shocked me was that Winston Churchill actually was a practicing druid.
That's the one.
Which was an ancient...
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one you're asking me about. Okay. Well, there was another one, wasn't there? Churchill, it turns out, was a druid. It was a cult dating back to the early Picts. I mean, this is going back to almost the Roman times. The druids were like the priesthood class of ancient, uneducated early Britain and Scotland. And it was revived as a sort of gentleman's society with all the various signs and secrets and procedures. Not unlike the Masons, I suppose. But to find out that Churchill was a druid and that his famous V sign, which was the two fingers up, actually is an old, ancient and very well-known druid sign, the signs of twos over threes, two fingers up and three fingers down. Nothing to do with victory.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And it wasn't both. It wasn't both victory and just a shout-out to the druids.
It was certainly perceived as victory, but that was the original sign for Churchill, was that it was his druid sign. And also, by the way, I actually found evidence of that. I checked into that, and there was I checked into the Churchill archives, and I wrote to them and told them who I was and why I wanted to know this. And they actually emailed me his application form, his certificate of membership. I haven't got it in front of me, but I could tell you exactly where he was ordained and what year it was and how much it cost him.
Wow. So what would that be like now? You know, if a politician was running for office, say Barack Obama, and we also found out that he was a druid, I don't know how that would go over now.
Well, I don't know how we... You know, Tony Blair did it. Tony Blair did it. You know, he maintained throughout his campaigning and throughout his prime ministership of the UK that religion played no part whatsoever in his politics. Only afterwards did he reveal that he was guided by God and he was actually quite evangelically religious, but admitted that he didn't want to bring this up because he knew that the British public weren't of a particularly similar mind and therefore probably wouldn't vote for him. So I know that's not the same as being a druid. There's nothing wrong with being a Christian or being a druid, but Blair did lie. He kept it quiet.
Well, it's amazing, and especially I read the part about how Churchill liked to keep a piece of wood near him at all times because he had that sacred connection with trees, I guess.
Well, that's another druid tradition, is that the druids believe that the good luck spirits lived in trees, which is where we get this expression, the tree huggers, that comes from. And that's also where we get this superstition of touching wood. And Churchill was on record as saying that he actually said, wherever I go in the world, I make sure I'm within reaching distance of wood.
Wow. Well, that blows my mind. Albert Jack is our guest this hour. You are a best-selling author, and we're talking about his book this hour, Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, The Strange Stories Behind Tall Tales. And we'll be getting back to that conversation in just a few moments. Right now, though, we are here to talk about our winter membership drive. Listeners help to pay the bills at Wisconsin Public Radio. And Rob Ferret is here with me. We're asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888- 202-2552 right now to make a gift in support of the programs you count on.
Last hour, the goal was 30 pledges. We heard from 49 listeners. Thank you so much for your pledge. Now our goal is to get 30 pledges by 11 o'clock. Meeting this goal helps make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to pay for the programs you rely on. Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and help us meet this goal.
Yeah, and I just want to say thank you as well for all those pledges last hour. We really do appreciate it. Listening to the Ideas Network is a lot like going out for coffee with a smart friend. It's enjoyable and informative, and it tends to pique your curiosity.
And someone's got to pay for it. You make this daily cup of coffee on the Ideas Network possible with your financial support. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. You tell us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Consider using your credit card. It saves time and postage and paper, and does put your money to work right away. So no matter how you choose to give or how much, take the next 2 minutes to make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to take Wisconsin Public Radio for granted. You tune into WPR, and every time you hear something good. But if you travel around the country, you'll realize what a gem we have here in Wisconsin. We hear that a lot from people who have left Wisconsin, by the way. We are proud of WPR, and you can be too, because you make it possible with your support.
Don't take it for granted. It really is something special. Help make it possible with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Do two good things at once. Make a $120 donation to Wisconsin Public Radio, that's $10 a month, and choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. Your thank you gift will be in the form of 40 meals for those facing hunger through a Wisconsin food bank in your area. Do those two good things at once right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hello, everybody. It's Garrison Keillor here. Hoping you'll think about becoming a sustaining member of your public radio station. Sustaining members, in case you don't know about this, people who've made the choice to support public radio with ongoing monthly payments, which help save a lot of money every year in paper and stamps and staff time. So when you join or renew today, become a sustaining member. Here's someone with all the details.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe you can afford $5 a month. Maybe 10 feels right. Maybe 100 feels perfect. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you become a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you take an important first step that begins a wonderful journey. Now take the next step and become a financial supporter.
The step from listener to supporter is easy. You decide how important WPR is to you. You decide how much you'd like to give, and then you make a pledge. Take that next step right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Today, we're asking you to pay for what you use, what you enjoy. You already do that for all kinds of other things. Now we're asking you to apply that principle to Wisconsin Public Radio. And the price? Whatever you decide. $1 a week, $1 a day. You choose when you donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might be wondering, well, how much should I give? Well, that, you'll be happy to hear, is completely up to you. Your contribution of any amount is going to be turned into great programs, programs that will keep you informed and entertained all year long. But make that pledge in any amount right now at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
When you do, you play an essential part in funding the programs you count on every day. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2552.
And as a little numbers check here, we are looking for 29 more pledges, and we need them in about the next 40 minutes. So you can help out now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's a great time to become a sustaining member of WPR by signing up for ongoing monthly installments from your bank account or your credit card. As a sustainer, you'll be automatically entered in all of our sweepstakes and drawings. Become a sustainer now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you give $120, that's $10 a month, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide meals to those facing hunger in our area and your area as well. It's a great way to do two good things at once with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Patricia and Terry from Wauwatosa pledged, and they say, "We love the Ideas Network and your programs. We like that our donation will help the food pantry. There are so many in need today, and every little bit helps. Thank you." Thank you so much, Patricia and Terry, and every little bit helps at Wisconsin Public Radio, too. Thanks for your pledge. If you haven't pledged yet, how about you? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your pledge now is very important at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And a big thank you for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking this hour with Albert Jack, who is the author of the book Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, the strange stories behind tall tales. And we'll be hearing more of them when we come back. And you can join in our conversation this hour by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org or weigh in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickert Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk urban legends with Albert Jack, who is the author of Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, The Strange Stories Behind Tall Tales. And Albert, you know, we referenced one tale which has really made the circuit over the years. I kind of grew up with it in a way. It's my era. This story about Van Halen and the brown M&Ms.
Yeah.
What about that one?
What about that one? I thought that was just a fantastic... That has been going around, hasn't it? I mean, Van Halen were one of the first big sort of stadium bands. It was as music, if you like, started coming out of the 60s and the dingy little clubs and the pubs, and I guess the Beatles brought it into the stadiums of the 70s. And, of course, by then, you know, in the old days, all a band would get was a couple of free towels and a crate of beer thrown into the backstage dressing room, and that would be it. Get on with it. But, of course, when the bands became more productive, like Pink Floyd and Van Halen and so on, the backstage rider, as they call it, which is their list of requirements, became ever more complicated and ever-increasing, to the point where for some of the stadiums, these contracts could be 100 pages long. You know, they had to have PowerPoints here and circuit breakers there and lighting here. And so you get the picture. It became important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Van Halen or Van Roth did, the lead singer, Philip Lee Roth, wasn't it? Or Dave Lee Roth, I beg your pardon. And he revealed this in his autobiography. Is what he did is he decided that he would demand a big bowl of M&Ms to be placed in the dressing room with no brown ones in it. It turns out this urban legend was true. But the reason he did it was not because of rock and roll excess or his Spinal Tap desires. It was simply because if he walked into that backstage room and saw brown M&Ms, he knew the contract hadn't been read properly. Therefore, check everything, especially the safety aspects. Now, I thought that was quite clever. You know, we all began by thinking, you know, what a jack. You know, why on earth is he... Who does he think he is? But it turns out to be a very clever and effective way of making sure the promoter has read the contract before they turn up and electrocute themselves on stage.
I wonder if that one was worth it. I mean, obviously the safety aspects, and it is clever, you're right. But on the other hand, it's taken years to get that cleared up. And in the meantime, everyone thought Van Halen was a bunch of prima donnas.
Yeah, didn't they just? One wonders how much they cared. One wonders how much they cared about that.
You're right.
Maybe I'm sure they cared what you thought, Veronica.
I'm sure they cared deeply. They just, never heard of me and could have given a hoot. Well, I mean, pyrotechnics, I guess when you're working with pyrotechnics and things like that, you want to get it right.
Oh, it's very important, and especially when it was all new. I think, although, you know, diversity, one of my other favourite urban legends, probably more from my era, was the, did Keith Moon really drive that Rolls Royce into the swimming pool? Which we've all heard of, you know, the rock and rollers, the Who, were known for their excesses. And it's kind of, you know, did he really drive a Rolls Royce into a swimming pool at a Los Angeles hotel? Because that's urban legend. That's what everybody thinks. So when I looked into that and I studied it quite hard and I made phone calls and rang round and spoke to his biographer, the Who's biographer, to try and find out if there's any truth in this. And it turns out that the hotel it was claimed to have happened at, the pool there is on the third floor.
Which would make it a little tricky.
True.
Yeah,
I don't think that's true, do you?
not off the cuff. But that has been referenced by other rock bands, right? Didn't someone put that very image on the cover of their album?
Well, Oasis did, didn't they? And Jeremy Clarkson, who does the motoring program Top Gear, I don't know if you get that in America. It's certainly big in this country. Actually reenacted it, and you know, he was invited to turn up to open a local swimming pool, and he actually reenacted it by driving his roller through the car park and straight into the pool. But I tell you one urban legend that is true, which I thought was pretty funny, and it involves Led Zeppelin and their manager. He was the legendary Peter Grant. He was a huge guy. And after one of these particular gigs they'd played in America and done the usual of smashing up their hotel room and all the stupid things that used to go on in those days, the poor little receptionist, as they were checking out, Grant was peeling off wads of notes and laying them down on the table to pay for the damage that his band had caused in the hotel. And as he was doing it, the guy looked up at him and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Grant, what's it actually like to throw a television out of the window?" Now, bearing in mind, they never admitted to anything. They just paid the bills, and they didn't say they did anything wrong. And Grant looked down at him. He was 6'8", Peter Grant. He looked down at this guy and stared at him, and then he just kind of just rolled off $300 and said, "Here, son, have one on us." And that's true.
Well, I'll never know what that's like. I don't know. Have you ever thrown a TV out a window, Albert?
No, I dropped one down the stairs once, so it's not really the same.
You know what? I don't think that counts as rock star access. But I guess you take
how
what you can get.
How rock and roll are we?
Yeah, I guess
yeah,
not very. Well, you know, one of the tropes that comes up in these legends, there's similar themes. And one that I notice is that often there is, you know, some guy or girl who's performing something somewhere, and they get heckled, they get hassled, and then they finally say, "Well, yo, can you do any better? Why don't you get up here and do this?" And then lo and behold, whoever's heckling them is someone to be reckoned with. Aren't there a bunch of those stories?
Oh, there are lots of those stories. I think the one you're referring to was when I think the Great Funk Railroad, the 70s band, were playing a gig in America, and a guy from the front row was heckling the lead guitarist constantly, and he was, "Yeah, you're rubbish, get off, come on, I can do better than that," and there's all the things you'd expect from a drunken heckler, and he started irritating a few people around him, and in the end, the guitarist stopped playing mid-guitar solo, took his guitar off, pointed to the guy and said, "If you think you can do any better, you come and do any better." So the guy gets up on the stage, and it turns out it was Eric Clapton.
That'd be a lot of fun if you were Eric Clapton.
Now, if that one, it would be hell yes, but if that's true, which it might be, then I'm pretty certain it was probably staged, because I can't imagine a musician of Eric Clapton's status heckling anybody else. I wouldn't think that's true for a minute. So if it's true, I'm sure they staged it, and it was probably quite funny.
Right, and he's a classy guy. He wouldn't do that, right?
I don't know. He had his moments, didn't he? If you've read his autobiography, there's areas of the 70s that you can't even remember.
So maybe it was one of those blackout moments.
Could have been. Who knows?
Wasn't there another one with Robin Williams, too, with a comedian? And this one, I think, was, you thought, maybe true?
I think it was, again, it was recorded, wasn't it? It's exactly the same thing. Robin Williams was at the back of a comedy club heckling, and in the end the comedian said, "Hey, Buster, you come and do it then." And so he got up, and then it was Robin Williams and brought the house down. And sure, there'll be loads of things like that. People not getting recognised who are pretty famous and a lot better than... I mean, that must be tough, though. Can you imagine actually being in a rock band or playing a gig and seeing Eric Clapton sitting in the front row?
No.
And being the lead guitarist? I don't think so.
A little bit intimidating.
Yeah, I should say so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what is your favourite? Go ahead.
Well, I was about to say that's probably about as much fun as making a pizza for Gordon Ramsay, isn't it?
You know, I wouldn't know about that either, but yeah.
But you wouldn't want to, though, would you? You know you wouldn't want to.
I wouldn't want to. No, no. It would be fun to be Eric Clapton, though, in that story, though, I have to say. If you were just having a slow night and you wanted to blow off some steam.
Yeah,
it would be. Go raise some trouble.
But my favourite urban legends don't really... I mean, those kind of celebrity ones, it's a little bit like the... you know, were David Bowie and Mick Jagger lovers during the 70s, you know, as they were claimed to be by certain biographies? And, you know, the kind of, so what, they're rock and roll stories, does it really matter? I think the urban legends that go back through history are the ones that I find more fun. I know, for example, one of my favourites, I think, is in the early 1900s, there was a retired army major, and he bought a 150-year-old farmhouse in a remote area of America. Or in fact, being an urban legend, it could be anywhere, couldn't it? And when they were moving in, he found in the cellar, he was intrigued to find one of those big 112-gallon ship's barrels. And when they checked what was in it, they opened the tap and obviously poured out some of the contents and had it checked by a local distiller. They found out it was the purest and most perfect quality rum that had obviously aged beautifully in this oak barrel over the course of 100 years or however long it had been there. It was absolutely perfect. So it became the kind of the talk of the town. There was so much of it, of course. He would give it away to friends. They would have parties. People would come round for tastings. They would bottle it. And in the end, after about 4 or 5 years of this, they decided to decant it from this old wooden barrel into more modern barrels. And his wife wanted to cut the thing in half and turn them up and have them as rose beds outside the front garden. You can see this picture going, can't you, so far, by the front door.
Mm-hmm.
You can see exactly what they were going to do. So they drained the barrel, and as they cut it open, they found inside the perfectly preserved body of a 17th century sailor.
Now tell me that's not true.
Oh, well, it could be true, couldn't it? Because they did use to preserve the bodies of sailors in rum and brandy. Nelson himself was preserved in brandy after the Battle of Trafalgar for the 3 months it took him to get him home. And if you can imagine unloading one of these tall ships on the docks in Boston or New York or wherever, where there's so much going on, it would be easy for at least one or two barrels to get onto the wrong cart and be stolen. Very easy, and then sold on the black market. You know, I kind of think that one is probably true.
Wow. Wow. That is...
It adds up.
Yeah. Makes you not want to drink rum from an unknown source ever again, that's for sure. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's like that story of the dead birds and rats in your upstairs water tank. You don't live in an old house, do you?
Well,
if so, there's a lid on your water tank. Go on, get upstairs. Get upstairs and check, everybody.
Well, here's the big question, though. If the rum was better than any rum anyone had ever tasted, maybe we should be looking into this a little more. Maybe people would like to donate their bodies. No, I'm going to stop. It's not a good idea.
No, it's pledge day. Pledge a body part for your rum or breath or your neighbor's... Pledge a body part for your neighbor's brandy collection.
Oh no!
On WPR today.
Oh no! There goes the show.
It goes your credibility.
There goes our credibility. It's been lovely having you on. No, I'm just kidding. There's more time. Don't go yet.
But by the way, before we fall out completely, I actually do want to pledge. I was listening to you. Can you do that through PayPal? Because I don't know if I can do it internationally.
Yes, you can do it through PayPal. Thank you so much. And we won't make you pledge a body part. We'll actually take plain old currency. WPR.org. Yeah, you can do it right now, in fact. Albert Jack, people, is going to make his pledge. You can make your pledge and join him. Thank you for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, Albert. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm going to be your... It's like 28 to go now, is it? Or 27 to go? Come on, people. Surely it's worth it. This hour alone is going to be worth $10.
I'm just going to hand it over to you.
Don't make me feel bad. I'm all the way down here. Am I not worth $10?
And we're keeping you out of the pubs of South Africa by talking to us now. So clearly your time is valuable. Well,
that's probably not a bad thing, is it?
Well, I don't know. That's for you to decide. Albert Jack, our guest this hour, he'll be back on with us in a little bit. He is the author of Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, The Strange Stories Behind Tall Tales. And he's making his pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert with Rob Ferret. And this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive, when we ask you to think about how much all of these programs that you listen to throughout the year are worth to you. And then you make a financial contribution in return at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 27 more pledges, actually 26 now with Albert's in the next 25 minutes. Thank you for already giving. We're not asking you to give an arm and a leg, just any amount that works for you. If you haven't pledged already, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You had to go there, didn't you, Rob?
I did.
The Ideas Network connects you with experts. And how many times can you pick up the phone and talk to the editor of a magazine, a politician, an expert on urban legends, for instance? Well, the Ideas Network brings these experts right to you. To help make it possible, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving couldn't be easier. We just need your name, your contact info, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
So save time and money and maybe use a credit card if you can. Or better yet, start automatic sustaining donations directly from your bank account. You choose how to give and then you do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Not many radio stations have the mission to inform, inspire, and engage their listeners. We do. These values are at the core of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR is a place to discuss and debate the issues, a place to examine the past and imagine the future.
Now, it's not something that we do for you. It's something that you do for yourself and for your community, because listener support is what makes all of this possible. Contribute now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this membership drive, we'd like to say thank you for your support in a special way. When you pledge $10 a month, that's $120 over the course of a year, to support WPR programs, you can choose a thank you gift that'll provide 40 meals to a Wisconsin food bank near you.
Let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio to those in need in the community. Pledge $10 a month and choose food for 40 as your thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
You've got something dynamite. I mean, I just want to give the biggest, most sincere thanks to the people that had this as their brainchild and that worked to see it to its fruition. You know, it's one of the tools of democracy that we have. We don't have town hall meetings anymore, but we do have an electronic town hall meeting on the Ideas Network.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support on this, the very first day of our winter membership drive. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret, asking for your support of the WPR programs that you count on. So thanks in advance for your gift of 5, 10, maybe 30 feels right, whatever amount is comfortable for you is right, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for 26 more pledges in the next 20 minutes. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on all year long. Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you give today, consider becoming a sustainer. As a sustaining member, you'll give a monthly amount, say $5 or $10, that will automatically come out of your bank account or credit card. Now, these monthly installments will continue until you ask us to make a change.
This means we can depend on you the way you depend on us, day in, day out, year in and year out, and you are in control. You can change your giving at any time. It's a convenient and enduring way to give, so become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about all the programs that you love. Well, how often do you listen and for how long? And then think about your budget. What amount will make you feel good after you've pledged? Think of that amount and then pledge online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
It's a great time to become a sustaining member of WPR. Sign up for ongoing monthly installments from your bank account or credit card. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you give $120, which is $10 a month, you can get our Food for 40 thank you gift and provide meals to those facing hunger in your area. So you get a little bit of extra incentive there to do good two ways with that pledge. And it's a great way Just make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Steve and Karen pledged from Middleton. They pledged for Food for 40. And to support WPR programming, they say it's really hard not to get a positive return for our pledge. Thank you so much. James from Wild Rose made a pledge. He says, WPR is my on-the-road listening network. I enjoy the music and the talk shows. Thank you so much for your pledge, James. How about you? Make a pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Your pledge now is very important at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I want to thank you so much for your pledge in support of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm talking this hour with Albert Jack. He's joining us by line from ISDN, from South Africa, over an ISDN line, fancy phone line. And he is the author of Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, The Strange Stories Behind Tall Tales. And we're getting a tour of these urban legends this hour. We heard about Van Halen and the Brown M&Ms. And Albert, one of my favorites, I think it's in your book too, but one of my favorites, which doesn't involve a celebrity at all, is this one about a parking lot. And the story is that there is a young man and an old woman who are vying for a coveted parking spot, and he gets there first, and he kind of rolls down his window and jeers at her and says, "Sorry, lady, you just got to be young and fast." And then she cranks her car into gear, rams his car. You know, apparently she's got a bit of money in the bank. And she says, "Oh, no, you just have to be old and rich," or something like that. I love that one.
I love that one. It's an inspiration to us all. We all want to be that lady, don't we? Apparently she was waiting for somebody to pull out of a parking space and waiting patiently at one of these supermarket, these mall, you know, out-of-city malls. And as the guys pulled out, before she could actually manoeuvre her car to pull in, this young racer whipped in, and she gets out of her car and says, hey, you can't do that. I was waiting for that spot. You can't do that. He says, yes, you can. Yes, you can when you're young and fast. So she gets back in her car, lines it up, lines the tow bar up, puts her foot down on this Mercedes, smashes the front of his car to pieces, there's water spurting everywhere, and he's shaken to the core, and he's saying, lady, you can't do that. She said, you can if you're old and rich. And she can as well.
I suppose she's behaving badly too, but I still like that story.
I like that story as well.
What do you think? Is it true?
Yeah, I hope so. I certainly hope so. One of my favourites, another one that's in this book actually, and although I didn't make this up, I mean I could claim I did, but I know I didn't. I'd heard it somewhere. Was about there was a very remote town, and it's just come back to me as being told as being in Australia, but in the book I set it as being in a rural part of England. Now there's a new police officer. You know, in the old days of community policing, everybody knew the old guy, and they were all friends, and it was all Howdy Bill, and you know, everyone was on first name terms. He retired, and the police force from down the road sent down a new young buck who was going to be their new community police officer, and nobody really got on with him, and he stuck to the letter of the law. So it was New Year's Eve, and they knew that there was going to be a bit of a party in the local tavern, and everyone was going to be... But they were all concerned that this young policeman was going to be around, and somebody was going to get stopped for drinking and driving. There was going to be a problem here. And sure enough, at about 10 past 2 in the morning, the first reveller comes rolling out of the pub, flat on the floor in the car park, falls on his face, stumbles across to his car, spends 5 minutes trying to find his keys, gets in, falls out, gets back in, turns it on, kangaroos across the car park trying to find a gear. At this point, the young police officer who was sitting there behind a tree waiting for exactly this to happen, blue lights flashing, pulls him over in the car, handcuffs, takes him off 15 miles to the police station to be processed. And of course, once he gets to the police station, gives him a breathalyzer, takes the blood test, the guy's completely alcohol free. And the policeman says, but how could this be? He said, well, I don't drink. He said, but I saw what happened in the car park. He said, yeah, he said, and by now everyone else will be home safely.
That's one of those don't try this at home ones. Pretty clever.
Well, I think there's nothing wrong with being a decoy. I'm not saying there's anything right about drinking and driving, by the way. I'm just saying that that's an urban legend that's probably
right,
true.
Right. Yeah, that's if that one's true, I'm sure that one will be making the rounds for sure. Now, another category of these urban legends, and that I tend to shy away of because I'm chicken toast, but there's a lot of scary stories that are urban legends. What are one or two of your favorites?
Well, it's the scary ones, isn't it, that possibly aren't strictly true. It's like, I mean, the book is called Phantom Hitchhikers, and it's possibly one of the most famous urban legends of them all, isn't it? It's the Phantom Hitchhiker. It's the tale of, again, it's a variation on a theme. The guy driving home down a dark country lane, either on a motorbike or in a car, comes across a young lady who's in an evening gown. She's obviously been out somewhere. And she's distressed and she's crying and she's lost and confused. So the guy stops and he picks her up and puts her in the car or on the back of the bike or whatever and takes her home. Takes her home, she jumps out of the car, thanks him very much. She runs into the house and he goes off home himself. And the following morning, he gets back into his car to go to work on his usual routine and he notices that the girl's left her coat in the back seat or blanket or... Again, it's a variation on a theme. So he drives back and he's going past the house anyway on his way to work. So he stops and he gets out and he goes and knocks on the door of the house and says, look, I picked up your daughter at Albion Corner, 4 miles up the road last night and brought her here and she's left her coat in my car. And the father says, my daughter was killed in a car accident on that corner 4 years ago. You can't possibly have picked her up.
Mm.
And so this story goes around and around, you know, the Phantom Hitchhiker. Where did she go and how did he get his coat? And, you know, it's been told so many times now that I think that and probably the Hooked Hand one, which is another scary one, are probably two of the most famous of them all.
I kind of like the Phantom Hitchhiker one. It's haunting. Yeah. It's not quite as, you know, scare the socks off you, but the Hook one kind of is, isn't it?
Well, it could be. If you're in Lover's Lane on a dark, windy, rainy night near a lunatic asylum and you hear over the radio as you're getting down to some whatever lovers do in Lover's Lane. It's been a long time. it's probably all changed.
That's another show. We'll talk about that next time, Albert. We'll catch you up.
That's one for after 9 o'clock. And, in the evening. And anyway, so they hear this news on the radio that there's been a maniac has escaped, and the description is that he's this and that, and he's missing one hand, and he's got a hook, he's got a metal hook on his other hand, and stay away and don't approach him, and he's very dangerous and blah, blah. The girl gets shaken up by this and says to the guy, do you know what? I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go home. Just take me home. So the boyfriend gets a bit fed up with this and says, no, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. She says, no, you take me home now. So he gets... you know, a bit of a strop on and puts his foot down and Will spins out of the lay-by and takes her home and he's not very happy with her at all and gets out of the car and walks around. And as he goes to open her car door, hanging on the car door is the hook.
Mm.
He was just about to open the door before he sped off.
Wow.
Could be true.
Could be true.
Not a ghost story. It's not a ghost story there, is it?
I kind of hope it's
the
not
other one,
true, but...
I hope it is.
You do.
I mean, but they're safe. Come on, they're safe. What's wrong? They got away. the other one I hope is true, and that's because I'm obviously disturbed, is that the carpet fitters who went down... It's not funny. The carpet fitters who went in to fit out the basement of a house, they'd finished fitting this new carpet downstairs, and it was the children's playroom. And just as they're leaving, they notice a bump under the carpet, and it's all been... put down now, and the guy says, oh, my cigarettes have fallen out of my pocket. Damn, man. We're not taking that carpet out now. Flatten it down. So they get a hammer and they flatten this thing down, and it's not really a problem, is it? They just bang it all down, and it's just a bit of underlay, and he's lost his cigarettes, and it's gone forever. And just as they're leaving, the lady of the house comes in with one of the children that she's picked up from school, and he goes running over to the hamster's cage and says, but where's the hamster? The door's open.
No.
Oh no, where's my hamster? And the workmen look at each other and then he realises his cigarettes are actually in his tool bag. And I'll let you fill in the blanks.
Oh.
Your listeners can fill in the blanks. I told you I was disturbed. Why do you think I write this stuff?
I didn't know, Albert. Now that I know, I'm going to have to put an asterisk. Wonderful guess, comma, disturbed. I love hamsters. Yeah, you've got the
wrong
Put it on
your database. All right, well, change it for a gerbil then, or something. You'd frog, whatever, something else.
I don't know. Snake? Can we do snake?
Yeah.
No, sorry. No, I won't pick on snakes either. Anyway, these are fascinating stories. You can see why they get around. They're fun to tell.
They're fun to tell, and also it makes you kind of... You know, as I put in the introduction, I think it's just actually knowing a few of these stories and telling a few of these stories, and you know the reactions you get. Some is, oh no, you get a mixture of fun and laughter and revulsion and that's horrible and you and like the drunken decoy, you shouldn't advocate that, you shouldn't say things. Whatever it is, you're getting reactions from people, and that's always going to try and that's going to make you seem more popular, isn't it? You go and tell these stories in your local bar. Before you know it, people will be saying, this guy's got some great stories, you should listen to him.
I bet you're a favourite down at the local watering hole, huh?
No one talks to me anymore. They're all bored stiff.
Well, I'm glad you talked to us this morning. Thank you, Albert, so much for joining us. It's been fun.
Absolutely. It's been great fun.
Albert Jack, the best-selling author of Red Herrings and White Elephants, and his book we're discussing this hour, Phantom Hitchhikers and Other Urban Legends, The Strange Science Behind Tall Tales. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert with Rob Ferret, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive, and we're here today to raise money, the money that we need to pay for programs that you enjoy, programs like this one. That's how WPR works. The people who use it help to pay for it. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to support the programs that you count on.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs you depend on. We're looking for 20 more pledges in the next 6 minutes. Make your donation now. You can help us reach that goal at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you pledge $10 a month or more, you can choose food for 40 as your thank you gift. Choose a gift of any amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to Veronica each and every week because you appreciate the guests that Marika and Rhonda bring on every week, and you appreciate the great job that Veronica does on the air, her warm and engaging presence, the great questions she asks, and behind the scenes, I can tell you, all the work she puts in to know the topic, to be ready to talk to the guest. And let's not ignore this for great moments like we had in this last hour. That was a lot of fun. We're hardened, grizzled radio people here, and we're still having a lot of fun learning along with you and being entertained along with you. This is great fun for us, too, not just for you. Pledge because you appreciate the work that Veronica puts in each and every week at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I don't know about hardened and grizzled. Can we substitute fresh and dewy?
Sure. Yeah.
At least for me.
Speak for yourself, pal.
Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes, and in return, you'll get so much back. So consider a donation of $100 a month.
Your $1,200 contribution helps us bring you the talk, news, music, and entertainment that you count on from WPR, and it helps make sure that our community and our state get all the public radio we want. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your donation of any amount is very much appreciated.
I'm Dan Stein, president and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin. Food banks have a need throughout the year. Last year, an estimated 575,000 different people received assistance throughout the state. It would be very easy just to end hunger by providing enough food because there's plenty of resources that exist. But in order for people to get involved, they have to be aware of the problem and lend a voice to it. So a program or an opportunity like this helps get the awareness out in the public. We're very grateful that people throughout the state are supporting Food for 40. This relationship with Wisconsin Public Radio, this is the fourth year it's been in existence. In the first 3 years, raised the equivalent of over 200,000 meals that we were able to provide people throughout the state of Wisconsin. To be giving them something as simple as food that you and I take for granted and just see a tremendous smile on their face, knowing that they don't have to worry where that next meal is going to come from, to me is tremendous success.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Veronica Rickert here with Rob Ferret asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month or anything above, below, or in between, we do appreciate and we truly do count on your gift.
And when you pledge $120 or more, that's $10 a month, you can ask for that Food for 40 thank you gift. You help Wisconsin Public Radio, and you help feed people in your community. WPR.org. You can pledge online or call 888-202-2552.
I want to give a big thank you to our sustaining members. With ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card, you have a big effect on Wisconsin Public Radio's funding, making it more stable.
You can make your pledge and at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you go there, you can find out how to make that sustaining pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's a great time to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Support those programs that you enjoy on, that you count on, because you're part of the Wisconsin Public Radio family, and we all do our part. We all pull together to get these programs on the air, and there's something special to that. So next time you turn on the radio, something to feel good about after you've made your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Keep on pledging through the news, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Pledge for a great moment you've heard with Veronica, whether it was today talking about urban legends, talking to George Takei, talking about polar bears. Think of all the great shows and the great moments you've shared with Veronica, and then make a pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much for each and every pledge. We really do appreciate it. And honestly, every pledge really does matter. So make your pledge today. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. And thank you also to Marika Suval, who produced this hour's program, Rhonda Fanning for her production and her technical direction. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.